This morning, wow, all kinds of weird things have been going through my head all week. I've been looking at all the different aspects of this Christmas holiday season. That article, Kyle, where's Kyle at? He's not here. Is he sick today too? Oh, okay. It's just really thrown me off, this whole nativity thing, and it's just really got me thinking. And so I've been looking at all the different details of this Christmas story this past week, and there are so many amazing things in this story. My wife and I, we like to watch a TV show called, what is it, The Great Bake Off? Is that, someone help me out here, Great British Bake Off or something like that? Is that the name of it, British Bake Off? I don't look at the title. I just watch the show with her because that's what she wants to watch. She's in charge of the remote most of the time, so I got to watch whatever she wants to watch. So a part of this show is it's like a baking contest where they eliminate bakers and stuff like that, and there's three different phases to it. And one of the phases in the show is called the technical, all right, where the first phase, everyone gets to make whatever they want to with whatever ingredients, and they get to be very creative with how they're doing it, and they get to plan for it and stuff like that, and so they get to make their baking creation. And then the second aspect of it is everyone is given the same ingredients and given the same directions, which are very minimal, and they all have to come up with a specific baking good or something, a specific product at the end, but they all have the same ingredients, same basic directions, and so on and so forth. And it's really kind of comical and kind of interesting how different it is when everyone has the same ingredients, same directions, how different the different byproducts are at the end of that challenge. And I don't know why I talked about all that. Anyway, so this week I've been looking at all the ingredients of this Christmas time. All the different parts that came together. And when you think about it, it's kind of complicated. And there's more to the details than what we really understand and realize until you really start digging into it. How God has put all these things together and combined them into an amazing story that affects not only that time, but eternity, and the product that came out of it. You know, I was looking at the stable thing, and I totally do get it, and understand that it might not have been a stable off to the side. It might be in a part of the people's home. There might have been people around instead of them being off lonely by themselves, but the main part of the whole thing is there was no room. There was no room. And we're living in a world right now where people are filling their lives with so many things, so many distractions, so many things that really don't matter. And we need to open our eyes and recognizing what does matter. You know, God could have done this in so many different ways. He could have done it in so many different ways. And sending a little baby into the world seems like the most unlikely, ineffective, inefficient way to accomplish this goal of saving the world, of reconciling his people back to himself. I looked at all the different ingredients and all the different characters that are part of this story, and we could read through the story. But I'm just going to kind of list them and kind of talk about them just a little bit. So you have Mary. You have Mary, who is highly favored by God. He hand chose Mary to be the mother of Jesus, his son. She could have said no. She chose to go along with God's plan. You have Joseph. Joseph was handpicked by God to be the father, earthly father, of his son, Jesus. As we heard in the Advent reading, that they chose Joseph to give Jesus his name. You know, Joseph could have very easily called on the rabbinic laws in Deuteronomy chapter 22, he could have very easily called Mary out. And what she deserved, according to society, according to the laws, was death. If you don't believe me, look at Deuteronomy chapter 22. As a matter of fact, it's cleared out, very clear that it says we are to purge the evil. If something like this was to happen, if someone was to become pregnant out of wedlock and all these different things, it was to be purged, that person was to be stoned. It's interesting that Joseph was hand-chosen by God. There's Elizabeth. And Zechariah, who were old, who would not be the likely candidates for a child that would be the forerunner of Jesus. But God sees past what's obvious to us. There is Caesar Augustus, the guy who decreed that everyone was supposed to go back to their hometowns. God's in control of that. As a matter of fact, it says he places in power who he wants to have in power for the very reasons that he will accomplish through each and every one of them. Good, bad, ugly, all of them. He places them in power for his purpose, not their own. There was the owners, and we don't know their names, the owners of the manger, whether it was in the house or in a special setting far away. Whether they didn't have a room inside, but they did make room for him somewhere. There were the shepherds, the lowliest of the low. There were the magi, the Gentiles who came along later. There was King Herod. There were the chief priests and the peoples of the law who looked up and found out he was supposed to be born in Bethlehem. This one gets me. It was the children. The children of Bethlehem. They're part of the story. The children who were killed by Herod. They're all pieces. They're all part of the story. And they're all important. Because each one of them plays a part. It's a part of the bigger story that God designed from the very beginning. It wasn't an accident. God was in control of every aspect of what was going on that time when Christ was born. And guess what? God is in control of every aspect of what's going on right now. Did you notice the one character I forgot? Did anyone? Jesus. Because that's what it's all about. And all the aspects, all the pieces, all the things coming together, all the ingredients joined together bring together one story. And that story has a perfect outcome. And that perfect outcome is not a little baby in the manger. That perfect outcome is actually God's expression of his great love. The story that God so loved the world that he gave his one and only son to the world he gave him. And you have to understand, God's love started with his son Jesus. As a matter of fact, see, Jesus was with God in the beginning. He was there at the time that all things were created. And God says that he loved his son. As a matter of fact, when Jesus came up out of the waters of baptism and the dove descended, what did he say? This is my son, what? Whom I love and I am well pleased with. Later on in his ministry at the Mount of Transfiguration, everything was lit up and everyone was amazed. And God's voice came and says, this is my son whom I love. I love my son. And it says, listen to him. Listen to what he says. You see, first and foremost, God's love, his perfect plan starts with his son. And he had all the details completely wrapped up. He orchestrated every aspect of this night, not only of that night, but all the things that were going on around it. You know, last night I got laughed at a little bit. Actually, I got nudged quite a bit. I think I got punched a couple times last night. Did you punch me? Oh, yes, you did. Because we were standing there, and Justin was out in the, where's Justin at? Justin, you still love me, man? You all good? All right. So Justin, he was playing Joseph last night, doing a great job. He was sitting there, doing fantastic. He and Bethany were out there together. Bethany, am I about to embarrass you? So they were just sitting there, doing their thing, and it was about 20 minutes into Justin's term as Joseph, and all of a sudden there was a voice that yelled out, what was it, Justin? Who was it? It was me, wasn't it? And what'd I say? Justin! Glasses! He's like, oh, he takes his glasses off. Put them aside. And Greg, he was the same way out there last night. What, is Greg here? Maybe they made him so mad he didn't come back. So Greg was out there, and he was one of the wise men. And we got this whole thing where the wise men are supposed to hold up their arm. Barb's smiling at me right now. She hears all the things I say to everybody. So I have them hold up their arm and point to the star. And he did it on purpose, I found it. So he's been doing it for a while. And I'm looking out there, and Ron's out there, and he's pointing the right way. And who else was with him? It was James was out there, and he's pointing the right way. And Greg's like this. I'm like, Greg, left hand. Oh, whoa. Puts up his left. Sometimes it's about the details. The details are important. God placed all these people, orchestrated all these things for the perfect plan. And you can read the Christmas story 1,000 times. I feel like I have. And there's always a little bit more detail. A little bit more understanding. You see, every aspect of this story has meaning, has significance, has importance. It either points backwards or it points forwards. It brings God's entire plan together in this one night. And it expresses his perfect love to all of mankind. Some people will accept it and receive that great love. And some people will reject it, just like some of the people in this story will reject it. And not experience the miracle. But what's behind the entire story that we celebrate, that we try to reenact, that we try to get people to understand and see and come to a heart moment, that they recognize this great, amazing, incredible gift in Jesus. What's behind every aspect? What's behind every piece of tape, every piece of paper, every piece of bow, every piece of ribbon? What's behind this incredible, mighty, and awesome gift? What's wrapping around it and what's inside it and what is at the very core of this gift is love. It's love. It's completely and totally about love. This entire story, not just this night, from the very beginning of creation to the very end where he returns, it's wrapped up in love. It is about love. It's about God's great love for his creation. And you're a part of that story. You're a part of that love. And I look at all the details, and I look at my life, and I look at your life, and I think, wow, God is in control of all these things. In the smallest details, God is giving us an opportunity to see his great love. In the smallest things. It was so cool. Friday night, I just got to tell this story again. Barb thought it was amazing that she was able to load the donkey by herself. She was like, man, I am so blessed. The donkey just jumped right in for me the night before. We had to pick it up one leg at a time and stick it in the trailer. Literally, we had to pick up the hind end and go, oof, and put it in the trailer. And the next day, she's, oh, no, I'm so blessed. The donkey just jumped in for me. I said, that's nothing. You think you're blessed. I'm more. You want to hear my story, how blessed I am? Friday night, we're driving along. And Donnie's witness to this, all right? You probably don't know it, but you were there. So we're out picking up the truck and doing all these different things, and I didn't have a whole lot to eat that day, so earlier I'd stopped and picked up a box of hot tamales. You know what hot tamales are, those little candy-colored candies? So I picked up a box of hot tamales, and I was eating my hot tamales, and I was putting them on the little armrest thing in between the seats, and we're driving along, and I don't know what happened, but I had to stop short. I don't think there's any animals in there, was there? Was there? Okay, never mind. All right, so we had a box of hot tamales in between us, and when I stopped or hit the brakes, my whole box of hot tamales spilled, and it was totally dark in the cab, so we had no idea what it was doing, but I knew when, as soon as I heard that noise, I knew what happened. My hot tamales were gone, and you could hear them falling out, and I was like, oh, my hot tamales. But we had other things to do. It was, more important things than hot tamales to worry about. So we jumped out and took care of everything and did the whole evening and stuff. And I came back and got in the truck that night, drove home, didn't think a thing about it. Next morning, I got up and I thought, oh, my hot, I love to have a hot tamale, but all of my hot tamales fell. They spilled. So I went out to the truck. Here's the cool thing. It's in the details. Every hot tamale that came out of my box, did you know this? They all fell into the cup tray. Not a single one of them was on the floor. Can you believe that? Is that crazy or what? And you know what? I know you're all thinking, that is just the most worthless story. Why in the world are you sharing that story? Because I saw it. Listen to me now, all right? So think about this just for a second, all right? What are the odds that, like, 40 hot tamales falling out of a box at a sudden stop would all fall into the cup holder and not onto the floor? What are the odds of that? So I got to eat them. It was good. And literally, I'm not joking. When that happened, you're going to think I'm crazy, but I was like, Lord, you are so good. That literally was the thought that came through my head when I saw all. Did you stop and pick them all up and put them in? No, you did not. That's good, because that would ruin this whole illustration if you've been out there putting all the hot tamales in my thing. God is so good. He cares about the details. And you know what? If we would recognize that God is in control of even the details, not just the good things but also the bad things, that he's got this all under control, he's orchestrating our lives in such a way that is to bring him glory. And if we would start seeing that and recognizing it and praising him, guess what? Our eyes would be open even further, and we'd see him at every turn, at every aspect of our lives, and we could give him praise. And that's exactly what he designed us to do, is to live in such a way that would give him praise. He is in every detail of our lives, every small, minute thing that is going on, the good and the bad. He's allowing it to happen so that we would recognize the power of his hand in our lives. He could have done it without the shepherds. He could have done it without Herod. He could have done it without Elizabeth and Zechariah. He could have done it without Mary. He could have just had a person come up out of the ground if he wanted to. He could have done it without a helpless baby waiting for 25 years before his ministry even began. He could have done it however he wanted to, but he did it in the details, and he included us in his story. That's how God works. You're not an accident. You're a part of his plan. And he wants you to know that. There's a passage in 1 John. You're thinking, oh no, that was a whole introduction. No, that was not the introduction. There's a passage in 1 John chapter 4. It says this. And I want you to really hear what he's saying to us through his word this day. It says, this is how God showed his love among us. This is how God expressed his love among us. This is how he showed his love. How much he loves you. He sent his one and only son, whom he loved, and with whom he is well pleased. He sent his one and only son, whom he loved, and he says, listen to him. He sent his one and only son into the world that we might live through him. He sent his son so that we might really live. And what does that mean? That means he wants us to live that abundant life, that free life. He wants us to live a life that recognizes him in our life every single day. He has a plan for us no matter where we're at. And what he wants us to do is recognize that he is in control, that his love abounds no matter where we're at. He wants us to live through him and for him. And if we're living for any other reason, it's not sufficient for why he created us, why he designed us. If we're not seeking him, if we're not acknowledging him, if we aren't seeing him in the details of our life, if we're not recognizing that the hot tamales fell in the cup holder because God wanted me to see him, that he's in control, that he's got the details, and guess what? I needed to remember on Saturday morning that he's got the details. Nothing is beyond his ability and his reach. When we start seeing that, we're able to live freely without fear, because then we recognize God's perfect love, and God's perfect love drives out all fear. We can live the abundant life that he designed us to live. And it's amazing. It truly is. I wish if I could do one thing, I wish in some way, shape, or form, I could get you to open your eyes in such a way that you would see him at every turn, at every decision, at everything that is going on, good, bad, ugly, recognize that he is in control and that he's got a plan in this, and he will bring that plan to fruition. It's going to happen. And he loves you. Listen to what it says. It says, this is how God showed his love among us. He sent his one and only son into the world that we might live through him. This is love. Not that we love God, but that he loved us and sent his son as an atoning sacrifice for our sins. Dear friends, since God so loved us, we also ought to love one another. No one has ever seen God. But if we love one another, God lives in us, and his love, not our love, but his love is made complete in us, because God is a source of all love. Listen to what it says. We know that we live in him and he in us because he has given us his spirit. Verse 14, and we have seen and testified that the Father has sent his son to be the Savior of the world. The Savior. I love verse 15 because he doesn't make it complicated. In order to experience this love, in order to have our eyes opened and that spirit live within us so that we can see how God is working in our lives, it's not complicated, it's not hard. It says very simply, if anyone acknowledges that Jesus is the Son of God, God lives in him and he in God. If we just acknowledge that he is the Son of God, that the baby in the manger is a preparation of the Savior who will die on the cross. You know, I don't know how many times I tell you guys this, you're probably getting tired of it, but the camels are not my favorite part. I know I make a big deal out of them. I know I talk about them a lot. But the camels are not my favorite part. The wise men, they're cool, but they're not my favorite part. Sorry, Ron, for teasing you. You were doing great. You didn't have to step up on the bale. You were good. The sheep are definitely not my favorite part. You like the sheep? You can have them. All right. The shepherds, I can identify with the shepherds more than probably anyone else. I appreciate the shepherds. They're not my favorite part. The angels are cool. You know what I'm saying. I had a guy come up to me on Friday night and stood there for like 5 minutes saying, how'd you do that? And I kept saying there's a platform back there because it was kind of getting annoying after a while. He kept saying, how'd you? I said, there's a platform back there. But how? They're standing on a piece of wood. There's stairs going up with a handrail. Dad, is this, how'd you do that? And I'm like, oh my goodness. I was about to take them back there and show them the platform that they're standing. They're cool. I love them. It's awesome. They do a wonderful job. But the angels aren't my favorite part. The donkey, the cow, Mary and Joseph, and even the baby in the manger. Still is not my favorite part. You know what my favorite part of the entire nativity is? The cross. The cross is my favorite part. Because all those other things are just pieces leading up to the greatest expression of God's love. You see, without that sacrifice, without that cross at the end, none of it else matters. It's the cross. The cross is why he came. The penalty of sin, the greatest expression of love, is on that cross. And it was for you, for each and every one of you.